Tonight, Mike fights the law and the law wins. James gets a handy in the men's room. And we forget how to read and speak English.
Shravapunk.com.
And by his side, as per usual, is the one and only, the spectacular, the incomparable Couch Potato Mike. How are you doing this week, sir?
I'm a little tired. I don't know if I have allergies or something. Little chest congestion-y. Well, and from jumping on your trampoline for hours yesterday, wait for you to get home, I've thrown my hip out of place and everything hurts.
Yeah, well, you're definitely living in the right state, in the state to have allergies or respiratory anything. This is the worst state to live in if you have any of those conditions.
Yeah. Which I don't usually, but it has to be cranked up to 11 for me to get anything from allergies.
Me, I have the worst allergies of anybody I've ever known. Oh no, that's not true. I've seen people with worse allergies, but not many.
Yeah,
my allergies suck, and unfortunately, all my kids have inherited that. So yay me.
You're sweet. Giving them non-curable diseases.
Yeah, it happens. I do my best.
Oh,
that was a good one.
Yeah. What do we have coming up on this program?
Coming up on tonight's show, we're going to be talking about how the police seized 10 children from my homeschool family because they're off-grid. How a Supreme Court judge says, no, you can't slap cuffs on a peaceful gun owner, Mr. Police Officer. We're going to be talking about food preservation and reviewing some delicious chili. We're also going to give James the chance to give us several survival things that you could do with a broken coffee maker. And we're bringing back the wild edible of the week. But before we get into that, it is time for a few words from our sponsors. Tell them about them, Johnny. Thank you, Mike. JMBullion.com for all of your gold and silver needs. A great monetary hedge against inflation. The money of the new world. Free shipping for any order $100 or over. JMBullion.com. CampingSurvival.com for all your bug in and bug out needs. CampingSurvival.com. Great place to get fish antibiotics. Just like human antibiotics, but gives you gills.
And doesn't require a prescription from your Nazi doctor.
Exactly. CampingSurvival.com. Mai Tai Exotic Asian Coffee. The best cup of coffee on either side of this great globe of ours. Proceeds going to help a local orphanage, and they pay their workers a fair wage. Many delicious flavors to choose from. Our very own Survival Punk recommends the Mexicali. That is Mai Tai Exotic Asian Coffee. And WellFoodCo.com, home of the Carne Bar, inventors of the Paleo MRE.
Delicious stuff. Rob Wolf, John Wellborn, great food.
All of these can be found on the banner on the right-hand side of SurvivalPunk.com. And the GreeningOut.com or GreeningOut.co.uk and the Greening Out Podcast. Dan and Katie Green. Insanity with a Scottish accent for all your libertarian needs.
Freedom!
Okay, and that'll do it for our sponsors. So let's just jump right into our first...
Before we do that, I meant to make a quick announcement that you'll notice a lacking in this episode that the Nutrition Punk segment has been removed, and the themes of the show will definitely tend to be more survival, firearms, prepper related, and not so much nutrition related.
Oh, but dear God, James, what's going to happen to the nutrition?
It's going to have its own podcast. So if you like the nutrition, you can go listen to NutritionPunk.com podcast as soon as that's up. And then if you like survival stuff, you can listen right here. And the two shall not twine as much as they have in the past. I get off on tangents and I either want to talk about nutrition exclusively or survival. So it dissuades some people and it brings other people, so, it will be separate now. No, I will not restart my computer. Avast. Suck my balls.
Avast ye matey.
Why don't you do it on that? It actually works better.
It doesn't. It's disabled.
No, I'm talking about put this on here. See, look at that. It's all over the place.
I hate that.
It works!
Anyway.
Yak ass.
Well, see, now it pops that up. Look what you done did.
I didn't do it. You did it.
Okay, so.
You're doing it wrong.
People. No, not that article. The other article. Not that one. That one. Breaking! Police seize 10 children from homeschool family because they're off-grid. This article has been making the rounds on the Facebook. It comes from offgridnews.com. From May 7th. So it was like a week or two ago.
Oh, but they have an update, too.
To read an update of the story, click here, here, and here. You may do that. We will not. An off-grid homeschool family of 12 in rural Kentucky was raided, the mother arrested, and the 10 children seized simply because the government disagrees with their lifestyle and their educational choices, family members and friends say. Until Wednesday, Joe and Nicole
Nogler.
What a weird and cool name. Nogler!
Well, that's one who
they're like Klingons or something.
That's one who noggles.
Yeah. Lived with their 10 kids in a cabin on 26 acres in Breckenridge County, about an hour southwest of Louisville. So, really close to Tennessee, actually. That makes it an hour north of Tennessee, doesn't it?
I can't remember where Louisville is.
They're an extremely happy family, friend Pace Ellensworth told the Off-Grid News.
Acting on an anonymous tip about the family's off-grid lifestyle, sheriff's officers entered the property and home Wednesday and even blocked the access road to the family property, the family says. Joe and eight of the children were away, but Nicole, who was 5 months pregnant, was home with the two oldest kids. Sheriff's deputies then seemingly allowed Nicole and the two children to drive away, but they only got a short distance before deputies pulled them over and took the two children away from the mom, who was arrested for disorderly conduct and resisting arrest.
I love it when you get arrested for resisting arrest. Officers, you need to go fuck yourselves.
Yeah. She says the arrest took place after she did not passively allow the deputies to take the children. Nicole was able to contact her husband and have a brief conversation.
Later, the sheriff ordered Joe to turn over the other children by 10 a.m. or be arrested for felony charges. The family says he complied. Poor guy. Deputies also threatened to impound the car, though a friend of the family convinced the deputy to allow Joe to have it back, the family says. The family may be off-grid, but they aren't anonymous. In fact, they have internet as well as Facebook page dating back 2012, where they frequently post pictures and videos of their children, animals, and their off-grid life. As of May 5th post showed a video of a toddler, Mosiah, learning to walk. Aw. An April 24th post showed a happy family gathering around a campfire roasting marshmallows.
They also post pictures alluding to their faith. Their Facebook page, which is nearly 2,000 likes, is called My Blessed Little Homestead.
I know that website. Yeah.
Ellsworth believes the arrests took place because of their simple way of life that some would call backwards, and because of the way they homeschool. The family's Facebook page calls it Back to Basics Life. They have a garden and raise chicks and goats. Deputies apparently were concerned about whether the children's needs were being met. Wave TV in Louisville, Kentucky, quoted one neighbor who was critical of the off-grid life. Another neighbor apparently had a confrontation with the father on Sunday, and that was reported to the police, the station said. In an official form, the family posted online, Kentucky's version of the Child Protective Services said that the children were not living in appropriate conditions and not enrolled in school, after another official from form even complained that there was no fence around the pond.
Terrible. How can people live without a fence around a pond?
I don't think I've ever seen a fence around a pond.
In unschooling, there is no set curriculum and the education is based on each child's strength. Makes fucking sense. You let your child decide the curriculum, Ellensworth told the Grid News. In unschooling, education doesn't take a back seat. It's listening to what they're interested in and fascinated in. It's the way all children learn before the public education movement, he said. This is a natural way to live, he said. It's actually a growing movement. They want to have a personal education and not a factory education.
Thank you.
Yes. Ellensworth called it whole life homeschooling. They are completely open about their life, he said.
about everyone is learning by living, and they're all extremely intelligent.
The family will have huge legal bills, and friends have set up a GoFundMe campaign here. More information about the family can be read here and here. They are industrious people trying to teach their children how to live right. The GoFundMe website said, through no fault of their own, they will now be faced with significant legal expenses.
Yes, and there are updates in this article. Check it out. If you've got spare funds, think about helping them.
This is such fucking bullshit. They had no fucking right to come in there and take these children from what seems like a perfectly happy and healthy fucking environment.
Yeah.
Where they're learning the skills they need to learn. Not just the skills that the fucking government says. The skills that I might add that since I fucking was taught in goddamn school, I have not used 99% of them.
No, no.
At no point has 1492 come up in real life.
Trivia games, that's about it.
That's fucking it. They're wanting to teach a trivia challenge? What? That's all that's doing is training you to be on fucking game shows. No.
The public schools teach you one thing and one thing well. How to sit there for 8 hours and do what you're told.
Yeah.
It trains you for a retarded workforce of being a worker bee.
No, I mean, this is a family that was broken up for no good goddamn reason. Why? Because they're off the grid. Because most of their fucking money's not going back to the fucking government. Mm-hmm. Because they're not paying school dues, money that goes to the fucking educational part of the fucking government. The government wants their fucking money, so they're gonna fucking arrest the woman for resisting arrest. Why? Because, I don't know, she's a mother that didn't want to lose her fucking kids over stupidity.
Yeah. And this is often a little tirade of my own here, but if you're a police officer, and you arrest someone for resisting arrest, you're a piece of fucking scum. You know better than that. That's not a charge. If you don't have a legitimate reason to arrest someone in the first place, then you can't charge them for resisting arrest. That's a dickbag move. You failed your oath you swore to the Constitution at that point, and you don't deserve a badge.
Personally, I think the whole charge of resisting arrest is the stupidest fucking thing. Nobody wants to be arrested. At least no sane motherfucking... Granted, there are some members of the Brotherhood out there, the fucking in-league gang and fucking prisons that actually like being behind bars, but they're never going to be charged with resisting arrest. Nobody wants to be arrested. I think the whole fucking charge of resisting arrest is stupid and should be fucking abolished anyway, especially in a fucking situation like this where it's like one of the only things I can nail her ass with.
And it seemed like she may have been resisting arrest slightly on a charge that... When the police showed up and forcibly tried to take her kids for no reason... What parent wouldn't throw a tamper on that? I mean, what parent wouldn't fight over that?
Yeah.
Oh, you just take them, whatever. They're yours, take them, yeah.
Yeah, the people that wouldn't fucking resist that don't need to have the kids in the first goddamn place.
Yeah, yeah. Let me show up at your house and try to take your kids
and
see how you act.
And then they fucking threaten the father to fucking, you're going to hand over the other kids or we're going to arrest your ass on felony charges.
Yeah.
What fucking felony charges? That's such bullshit. What, being a loving fucking parent?
Yeah.
It's teach...
Kentucky, you're a dickbag.
Oh, Kentucky's always been full of goddamn dickbags. And Kentucky's infamous for being full of fucking idiots, too. When I went to basic training years and years ago, yes, shockingly enough, I tried to join the Army at one point. When I went to basic training, that first fucking day I was there, there was this fucking specialist who was getting everybody to fucking fill out these fucking forms, which actually had fucking, like, it was almost like a high school test or whatever. That motherfucker said out loud, "Is anybody in this room from Kentucky?" One guy raised his hand, like, "Somebody help that motherfucker with his math skills."
Oh my god. Actually, I took the ASVAB in high school because it got me out of like 4 classes that day.
Oh my god.
And then scored relatively high, so then I got, you know, pursued. Until I dropped out, because I'm a school dropper outer.
No, but everybody out there who thinks the way that I do on this and agrees that this whole thing is total fucking bullshit, these people should be fucking giving their children back. You need to fucking speak up. Not just on the goddamn internet where every asshole out there with an asshole can fucking spread their asshole opinion. Go to your fucking congressman. Go to your fucking senator. Raise a fucking stink. This is bullshit. If they could do that to them, they can do it to you over more trumped up shit.
Yeah. If you live anywhere near these people in Kentucky, definitely Let the a sheriff. Oh, you vote the sheriff in.
Oh yeah, and I got a new, and I got a fucking word I want to share with a piece of shit that fucking called the goddamn cops on it. Oh, are you God. So goddamn pissy in your shitty fucking little life that you see a happy family and you're like, oh, that can't fucking stand. I'm miserable. I'm gonna make them miserable. Go fuck yourself with a goddamn bowl of dicks that Michael Moore is currently eating.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably, and he can go suck a dick. He probably already does suck a dick, and that's probably what the guy was fighting with him over.
Yeah.
Quit getting your dick, quit sucking dicks on my property. I'm calling the cops and having you arrested for being a good father.
Alright, so I didn't realize it, but both stories today are fairly anti-police. Sorry, police, I know there's a bunch of good ones of you out there, but this is just the way the cookie crumbles today. Federal appeals court says to police officer, no. You can't slap cuffs on peaceful gun owners.
Okay, right off the fucking bat, cops have too much goddamn power.
We went into the how I would run the police system in a libertarian paradise.
Oh god.
You know, obviously, yeah, there'd be more accountability, and they would be public. You know, they'd actually be employees. I mean, you go to your work and start being a jackass to people, your boss is gonna fire you quick as hell.
Yeah. Cops don't have, cops know that they can be a jackass to everybody in the fucking public and not get fired.
Yeah. So, every part of Sean Northrup's midsummer evening walk with his, thank God there's a comma there.
With his wife, daughter.
With his wife, daughter, grandson, and dog was legal, including the holstered handgun he openly carried on his hip. But that was not enough to keep Northrup from being disarmed, handcuffed, and threatened with arrest by a police officer. Too bad they don't give his name. Fortunately, the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals refused to let the officer who illegally detained Northrup's escape accountability.
Thank you.
Exemplifying the kind of judicial engagement that is needed to protect law-abiding citizens from unreasonable searches and seizures.
Northrup, a resident of Toledo, Ohio, was enjoying a peaceful walk with his family when a passing motorcyclist, Alan Rose, caught sight of the firearm and yelled that Northrup could not walk around with a gun like that.
Why not?
Northrup's wife, Denise, informed Rose correctly that it is perfectly legal to openly carry firearms in Ohio. Rose nonetheless called 911.
God damn, God fucking cocks, dick sucker, fucking mind your own fucking business.
Yeah.
Stating that he had observed a man carrying his gun out in the open. That is not... The dispatcher also told Rose that it is legal to openly carry firearms in Ohio, but apparently a bit uncertain directed Officer David Bright of the Toledo Police Department That's to the fine. Scene, relating to Bright that Northrup was walking his dog, carrying a handgun out in the open. When Bright encountered Northrup, Northrup was still walking his dog, his gun secure in its holster. What happened after Bright stepped out of his vehicle at Bright, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, I thought the same thing.
Bright out of his vehicle and approached Northrup is disputed. According to Northrup, Bright announced that he would not shoot, that he would shoot Northrup if he went for his weapon, refused to answer any questions about what was going on or whether Northrup was free to leave, and threatened to arrest Northrup. Shit, where to go? Northrup for inducing a panic. Ultimately, Bright disarmed Northrup, placed him in handcuffs, and put him in a squad car where he remained for half an hour. Upon discovering that Northrup had a concealed carry permit, which, in point of fact, he did not need in order to openly carry his gun, Bright released Northrup with a citation for failure to disclose personal information. The charges were later dropped.
Northrup sued Bright and other members of the Toledo Police Department in federal court, alleging violations of his rights under the Second, First, and Fourth Amendments, as well as state law. The district court rejected Northrup's First and Second Amendment claims, interesting, but held that his Fourth Amendment and state law claims against Bright could go to trial. Bright then appealed to the Sixth Court, asserting that qualified immunity from suit. Asserting qualified immunity from suit. Qualified immunity protects police officers from being held personally liable for violating rights unless those rights are clearly established. What? In practice, this judge made doctrine all too often insulates police misconduct. My brain is just broken from this.
The judge made doctrine.
I got it. The judge made doctrine all too often insulates police misconduct from both liability and meaningful judicial scrutiny. It has long been established that the Fourth Amendment prohibits officers from coercively stopping and frisking people without a reasonable suspicion, and that they are committing a crime or about to commit a crime. In the case of Terry v. Ohio, 1968, the Supreme Court defined reasonable suspicion, explaining that officers must be able to point to a specific observable facts and evidence indicating that a person is armed and dangerous. An inarticulate hunch or intuition will not suffice. Nor is it enough for officers to suspect that a person is armed, as the Tenth Circuit would later put it. To hold that the presence of a gun is significant to justify frisk would be effectively eliminate the Fourth Amendment protections for a lawfully armed person.
In a carefully reasoned opinion, Judge Jeffrey Sutton determined that if Northrop's accounts of the events were accurate, whatever suspicions Bright may have harbored that Northrop was committing a crime or was about to do were not reasonable. The specific facts that Bright relied upon a stop, specific facts that Bright relied upon in stopping, disarming, and detaining Northrop consisted entirely in 1. Northrop's open possession of a firearm, and 2. The 911 call, which informed Bright that Northrop was openly carrying a firearm. Neither of these facts suggested that Northrop was breaking the law or was dangerous. As Judge Sutton pointedly observed, while the dispatcher and the 911 caller may not have known the details of Ohio's open carry firearm law, the police officer had no basis for such uncertainty. While Bright argued that he faced a difficult decision, respond to the community's fears and the appearance of a gunman, or do nothing and hope that he was not about to start shooting, Sutton rejected this as a false choice. Absent any actual evidence that Bright was about to start shooting, Sutton reasoned Bright's hope remains upon the word for the trust of the Ohioans that have placed their state's approach to gun licensure and gun possession. No law-abiding American out for a walk with his family and his gun should end up in the back of a police car. No officer responsible for putting him there should be able to escape responsibility for his misconduct. Judge Sutton's decision provides a blueprint for ensuring that those who enforce the law are not beyond its reach. As for Bright, a jury of Ohioans will determine whether he betrayed their trust.
I would definitely say he did. Yep. And before we even get into comment on this, I think that one of your opening top of your statements should be, James and Mike can't read today.
Oh my God.
Today, James and Mike can't read. Anyway, good job on this judge. Good job on this motherfucker.
Hell yes.
I don't really even want to blame the 911 call operator. I mean, she stated that she is not a law, but she kind of felt, it was her job to pass that along to an officer, whereas the officer should have been like, I would have found the person that called it and been like, it's illegal. Don't call the police. You wasted our time.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that guy's carrying a gun and a holster with his family. He's a hardened criminal.
When I was a manager for the retail store, you would not believe how many times people, like employees or customers, would be like, there's someone walking around with a gun. And I'm like, well, that's good. He probably ain't going to shoot anybody. I don't care. Stop being a fucking... I just wanted to pull out a switchblade and be like, snitches get stitches, bitch. Just start slashing people up.
Okay, it's not just reading. You just can't talk in general.
I can't. I'm just tired, dude. My brain is broken. But the podcast must go on. So, this officer does need to be held accountable for making a poor decision.
Yeah.
Going up to him and threatening to shoot him? I will shoot you if you don't answer questions. Someone should have filmed this motherfucker.
If a fucking cop had to fucking I'm surprised nobody did. You know, the day and age we're living in. But if a fucking cop had to fucking respond to this stupid-ass call, he should have came out there and be like, got a call that you're walking around carrying a gun.
Are you trying to commit a crime? No. Have a good day.
Have a good day. Yeah.
I mean, it's obvious the guy was with his wife, his kid, and his dog.
Yeah.
They were out for a walk in a residential neighborhood.
Yeah. I mean,
not a lot of people go on home raids with their kids.
No, I'm actually not a fan of open carry just because it does cause so many issues. And if there is a bad guy, he's going to see that you have a weapon, which is for good or bad. One, you could scare off a person by being armed and they know you're being armed. Or two, you'd be the first person to be shot before you know there's anything going on. Take out the obvious targets that are, you know, a threat. So I don't like open carry, but, you know, it's a goddamn right of this person to open carry. So, you know, we need smarter officers, and we definitely this judge with, you know, saying, you know, you're wrong. It's bullshit.
Yeah. No, I'm very proud that there are judges like Judge Sutton.
Yes.
Who's not going to just fucking stand there in the fucking brotherhood of servants of the court and be like, no, we can't, you know, and he can do whatever the hell he wants. He's a cop. He's an officer of the law, and you need to respect him. You're lucky he didn't shoot your dog.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So let's calm down.
I refuse to.
And let's jump into the main topic of today. I'm glad that you put the main topic before the gadget punk, because it may still be cooking in its dehydrated bag of rehydration. Anyway, so the main topic today is food preservation. We're going to go to sort of like the old school, you know, basics of survival prepper and just tackle food preservation methods. A lot of them that I have personal experience with, a couple of them I do not. I mean, like, I have no experience jellying. Well, I did make bacon jam one time. That was tasty.
That doesn't count.
Yeah, I made bacon jam. It's imagine like jelly made of bacon. It's like bacon and molasses spread.
Imagine soda made of bacon.
That was terrible and an abomination.
Yeah.
It was. So, you know, we're going to go over a couple. I would say number one food preservation, freezing stuff. The power's up 90% of the damn time.
Mm-hmm.
Freezing things works really well. What was it, last summer, maybe? You and your wife had this giant bag of jalapenos. You're like, we'll never really eat them before they go bad. So you gave them to me.
Habaneros.
They were habaneros? No, they're jalapenos.
Were they orange or were they green?
They're green.
Oh, wait. Yeah, never mind.
Yeah. So you gave me a giant, giant Kroger sack. That's what we call them in the South. They're not plastic sacks. They're Kroger sacks. Everything's a Kroger sack.
Some of the Walmart bags.
I call them Kroger sacks, too.
You're horrible.
Anyway,
person.
Just same like Pop. But anyway, I still have those. I took them home, chopped them up, processed them, deveined them, deseeded them, and then you spread them out on a cookie sheet, put them in your freezer to freeze, and then you put them in a bag so they're frozen individually and separately.
Yeah, but what can you do with them?
Anything you do with a jalapeno.
You can't make a popper.
Yeah, you can. Oh, yeah, you can.
You said they were chopped up.
I cut them in half. Cut them in half. Cut the end off of them, cut them in half, take the seeds and the vein out of it, and then you freeze them. And then I have. Oh, my God. When I went to go to Jack Spirico's house a couple years ago, he made some from frozen and some from fresh because it was summertime.
Mm.
So good. Because he breeds his jalapenos for the red jalapenos that are hard to find.
Oh, yeah, the red jalapenos. Yep. I see those all over the place.
Yep, whatever. Yeah, so, you know, and chop them up, you throw them in chilies, you put them in stews, put them in eggs, omelets, whatever. Whatever you want to do with a jalapeno, you can do. And you do that with pretty much, like, a lot of things you can do that with without having to parboil it. Mm-hmm. Some things you got to, like, you know, just quick steam just to break the surface, and then you can freeze them like that.
Right.
So that's, I mean, it works well. It works like 90% of the damn time. I mean, power almost never goes out. I mean, if it goes out, then you just eat that stuff as quick as you can and try not to open it as much as you can.
Yeah.
So, I mean, people are like, oh, you know, freezing, you know, not the best because it can, you know, the power can go out and this and that. Well it's, I mean, for.
Keep the freezer door closed if the power goes out.
Keep the freezer door. Yeah. I mean, just for like time savings and effectiveness, like it's probably the easiest and best. Like, you can get lots of food, you know, either from your garden, from the store, from friends, from family,
mm-hmm.
put them in the freezer. It stores a long time and it works. The other thing, canning, I have not done a lot of canning, but I have done some canning.
Mm-hmm.
I can ground beef, actually.
Interesting.
I can, like, several pounds of ground beef. I used it to make chili one time, and it was some of the best damn chili I've ever made.
Oh, really?
You know, like, a year later, I opened up a can, you know, a big quart, to make some chili, and, it was so good. You know, it's already cooked, so I just kind of added, like, last minute just for flavor and, you know, the juice and stuff from it.
Yeah, of course.
So good.
So good!
Yeah. I ran away one time to make, to can butter. Which is not like hot canning, like you bring the butter to like a liquid form to where it's pourable.
Yeah.
And then you put your jars, your mason jars, in the oven and you sterilize your tops and your lids. And you bring up the temperature of the glass jars to like 200 degrees.
Better be tempered glass.
It is. I mean, they're made to go in like, you know, pressure canners.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Just standard mason jars?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You can cook in them and shit. So, yeah.
I didn't know that.
You do that, and then you bring them out, you pour in the butter in the cans, you put the lid on.
In the jars?
The jars, yeah. You pour them in there, you put the lids on, and then it cools, and it pulls down and forms the suction, and it's hot enough that it's going to, you know, not have any bacteria in it. It works with butter, and there's people going back and forth, like, oh, it's bad, it's terrible, you can get sick from it, and people are like, oh, I've done it for years and years and years, never had a problem. I did it one time, but this was like 10 years ago when I was stupid.
Oh, God.
And I actually thought that Country Crock was butter.
Oh.
So I tried to can Country Crock vegetable spread, which is not butter, and it was a failure. It was disgusting. It started separating to like liquids and like solids, yeah. And
it'll do that because it's oil.
Yeah, that's part of their day. Can you take butter and buttermilk and make heavy cream?
I'm not
that's
sure.
What their constituent parts are.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it works that way.
Can you recombine them?
Oh my God, we have the technology.
If you know, write in. So there's that salt curing. So you can make a lot. You can make salt cured bacon, which you technically don't even need to smoke it. Mm-hmm. You can just salt pack it and cure it that way, and it lasts without refrigeration for, you know, years. I mean, hams. There's a lot of things you can do with just salt curing. Hams, prosciuttos, bacon. Pretty much the pig loves salt.
Hmm.
The pig was made to be salt. Like, throw the whole pig in there. Yeah. Screw it. All the meat. Have you ever had prosciutto, by the way?
I've never had prosciutto.
I don't care for it.
Oh, really?
It has some funk to it. It's like funky bacon.
I always assumed it was like rich people bacon.
Yeah, except for rich people like funky food. I mean, like funk, like funk.
Funk doesn't tell me a lot.
Like, if you put like gym socks through like the bacon curing method with like smoking and salting, and then you try to eat like, you know, a salt cured smoked gym sock.
That is disgusting.
It's
dude.
Funk, dude. It's funky.
I am never gonna eat a gym sock again because of what you just said.
I know. So there's that. I mean, we're kind of running through it just a little bit.
What are your thoughts on pickling?
I'm not a big fan of pickles, but a lot of things that are pickled, I'm kind of okay with.
Pickling, for the most part, is a pretty simple process.
Yeah. I mean,
you get your vinegar or your brine of whatever, and you put
vinegar, salt, and sugar is a basic brine.
And then you just fucking put the stuff in it and wait.
Yeah, and you can do, like, refrigerator pickles, which is just that. You bring it to a boil, you add in your cucumbers, you put them in the fridge and let them sit there. They're not going to last as long, but they're made to be eaten, you know, within, like, a week or so.
Believe it or not, I've actually done some pickling.
Really?
Yeah. I used to make my wife pickled eggs back in the day. You remember that? Yeah. Yeah, I used to make her pickled eggs all the time.
Never knew that.
Mm-hmm. It was way before you even got into the survival stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, I never thought to even bring it up to you. But, yeah, we used to do that all the time with pickled eggs. She loves pickled eggs. She loves pickled eggs. She loves pickles. She loves.
How'd you go about doing that?
Honestly?
What was the process?
You want to know? We would do it the cheap way sometimes. Because it started off, I bought her a fucking big thing of pickled eggs.
And you kept reusing the brine?
And kept reusing the brine. Yeah. I mean, it was ready-made brine. We weren't going to fucking throw the... I mean, the brine was still good. We'd boil... run out of eggs, boil up some more eggs, put them back in the brine, and let them sit.
Yeah.
And after a bit, we had pickled eggs again.
Yeah. Yeah, that works.
I mean, it was a cheating way to do it. I mean, but hell, that is a great way to reuse stuff.
Yeah. I've not really done much with pickles, although, or pickling. I've done, maybe we're jumping ahead, but I've done a dry pickling method of making biltong, which I don't know if you ever tried that, because sometimes you're weird on trying
biltong, food. Biltong, what is that? Are those weird mushrooms that grow in the mud?
No. It was a time that I hung up the meat in my room on a fishing line from like, sticks.
Oh, I think
we tried some commercial biltong on the episode of.
Yeah, that was so weird.
Yeah, well, that was different. That wasn't like my biltong. My biltong was thick sticks of meat that was like dry on the outside, like, you know, crispy jerky. On the inside, it was like tender like a steak, like it was still pink.
The shit I tried was like wet coming out of the package. It looked like fishing bait.
That was, yeah, it was different, yeah. You like the cured sausage, though.
I like that. Well, yeah, I mean, that was like a fucking thick Slim Jim.
Yeah.
That I like. I don't like the stuff coming out wet, though.
Yeah, yeah. My biltong is not wet, that I made. And it was, I mean, the process is super easy. It's been done in Africa for millennia, century, forever. But I have done, a good bit of, fermentation. So I've made sauerkraut a few times.
Fermentating
Nando's,
it's fermenting.
Yes, I know. I've done sauerkraut, and homemade sauerkraut does not remotely taste like anything you've ever had in the stores or anywhere.
I wonder what's the process on that? Is it just pickled cabbage?
You shred up heads of cabbage.
Uh-huh.
You put them in your vessel. I used a 5-gallon bucket that I'd gotten from Walmart. Okay. Food safe 5-gallon bucket.
All right.
I shred up like, oh my God, 5 heads of cabbage.
Wow.
Put them in there. For that, I think it was 5 tablespoons of salt. It's actually the very first Survival Punk article ever written was on how to make sauerkraut.
Seriously?
Yeah, 5 teaspoons of kosher salt. Mm. Gotta be kosher, not iodized salt. I think some people say to mix it up. Other people say just to put it on top and just let it sit. And then you put something on top. So if you have a real crock, there'll be like a heavy lid to put on top. I found a glass plate that fit the inside diameter perfectly.
That's sweet.
You drop it in, and then you put a weight on top to weight down so that it's all beneath it. Some people say to add water.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't. I went with the dry method because it squeezes the salt, pulls the moisture out of the sauerkraut,
right,
creating a brine, and then the weighted lid keeps everything below the water. So the top of the top layer will get a little scuzzy, but you just get the sauerkraut beneath it. So everything beneath that plate is perfectly fine sauerkraut.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's the top layer. It's going to be, you
mean the stuff that comes up over the plate?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant the top layer of what was under the plate.
But no, if you do it right, everything stays submerged below the plate. So there'll be like some like scuzzy, like, it's just like bacteria growth on top of the plate and stuff. You just pick beneath it. I mean, everything of sauerkraut you've ever had has been that way. They're all made in barrels, and they're all made the same if they're actually fermented sauerkraut.
It's the proper way to do it.
Right. You know, it was a little crispy. It was, I mean, it had a little funk to it, but it was a good funk. It wasn't like prosciutto that was overpowering. Like, you know, just had like a...
We should... You know, speaking of brining, me and you, as an experiment for this show or for the new show that we're going to start doing... We should fucking make our own corned beef.
I've always wanted corned beef.
Yeah. I mean, because it's a brining method to do corned beef, too.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I saw one time on this one fucking show, it was a Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. They had this one. I know we're way off on a tangent here.
Yeah.
But they had this fucking place that basically had invented their own type of fucking deli meat. It was this weird process they took. It was basically, it was the weird bastard son between fucking corned beef and pastrami.
Nice.
They brined it and then fucking roasted it the way that you do pastrami. And it was just, they said people literally will come from over 100 miles away for this fucking meat. And it's made there in sight. You can't get it anywhere else. Yeah.
Yum.
But they gave you the whole fucking they didn't tell you their secrets and that they put in their brine, though. I mean, but they gave you the whole fucking process on the show. But
yeah.
I think we should do...
With that, we should, okay, we should do that. We should learn how to make our own corned beef. Then you should fucking make us some fucking sauerkraut, and we could have survival punk Rubens.
I will also then follow the recipe to make a loaf of paleo bread. So they're paleo. I've made paleo. Oh my god, I've made paleo Rubens before.
No, fuck that. You know, I got something better. You can do that, or I can get some like really thick cut bacon and make thick cut bacon weaves.
Actually, I want to find a store that has pork belly.
Pork belly?
It's like bacon, if it was bacon was a steak size.
Oh god.
And I want to get some of that and make some, do some experimenting with pork belly.
Hmm.
I kind of want to make an open faced sandwich with pork belly.
Interesting.
Yeah.
But where were we? Oh yeah, food preservation still.
Smoking. We've touched on smoking a bit.
Juggling.
I've not done a lot with juggling. What are you looking at?
Jugging.
Jugging.
Oh.
Juggling. Yeah, so I mean, smoking at work, you know, low temperature, the smoke will, you know, put a layer on it and just like make good ribs. You make good ribs by smoking them?
Yeah.
Low temperature smoke, cold smoke.
My advice for anybody out there who makes their own, who smokes their own ribs, go easy on the fucking vinegar, okay?
Oh my god.
And get the proper cuts of meat.
Yeah. So you have you ever seen this shit in stores, potted meat?
Yeah, I used to eat potted meat back then.
Potted meat actually was a historical method for preserving food. Not the little cans like that, but you would get like a ceramic jar,
yeah,
and you would put your meat in it, and you'd cover it with a layer of lard. And it, when it's liquid, you know, boiling, you know, liquid lard, you pour it on top, it fills in all the crevices, all the cracks, and it forms a layer on top. When it cools, it prevents an air barrier. No air can get in it, and your food stays preserved.
I'm pretty sure potted meat is basically just what happens to the screwed up Vienna sausages.
Ground up brains and penises.
No, I'm pretty sure potted meat and Vienna sausages are pretty much the same thing, just ones in like tube steak form. They taste identical.
I
used to eat potted meat and deviled ham back in the day. The little cans that had the paper wrapped on and the little devil on it. Yeah.
I actually got incited a few years ago when I saw a can of roast beef.
Deviled roast beef.
I tried that and it was disappointing. Deviled pastrami. I actually like the cans of corned beef. I've been a fan of that since we were homeless.
Oh, like the corned beef hash stuff?
No, just the can. The canned corned beef.
I've tried canned corned beef and I wasn't a big fan of it. I like corned beef sliced.
It's different. I mean, much like anything, if you throw it in a skillet and put a little brown on it and then put it on a sandwich with some sauerkraut and, you know, I've made a corned beef Reuben sandwich from canned corned beef and it was decent.
I need more canned meat in my life.
I was going to say, we need to go get Reubens. It's cheat day. I want a Reuben.
You want a Reuben?
Nah.
They sell them at Arby's.
No, we need a real Reuben, not an Arby's fucking Reuben.
Well, I don't know where to get a real Reuben.
If you know where to get a real Reuben, please send an email to james@survivalpunk.com. There's some delis in Nashville.
Where?
The one that we used to go get ours from all the time.
Oh, you mean that Dalt's Grill over in West...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God, that's the best fucking Reuben I've ever had. And their onion rings. Oh, my God. And they fucking delivered. We would fucking order from... We wanted delivery, and we didn't always want pizza. So we would order from Dalt's Grill back when we lived in West Nashville all the fucking time. It was so... Oh, God, I love their fucking Reubens.
You know what used to be next to Dalt's Grill? Calhoun's, they have good ribs.
We used to love to go.
Oh yeah, we used to go to Calhoun's.
I went on Unlimited Ribs Day, and that was the best thing ever.
We went to Calhoun's a few times for their Unlimited Ribs Day.
Oh my! But this is Survival Punk, not Nutrition Punk. Let's get back on topic.
It's because we're hungry.
Yeah. I blah blah blah. I think that's it. So jerking is an old school.
That's old Native American method.
Yeah, and the dehydrator in general. I've done a lot of good stuff with my dehydrator.
True jerky was sun-dried back in the day. I mean, and they would do that because they, you know, they'd have a kiln and they'd have all this fucking meat that they knew would go bad if they didn't do something with it, so they'd fucking sun-dry it, and that way it made the meat keep for very long fucking time on very long trips.
Speaking of which, the ultimate protein bar, I'm sorry, Alton Brown, you're wrong, is not... granola and soybeans.
Dude, he was using soybeans and he used
wheat germ.
Wheat germ and fucking silky tofu.
Silky tofu, yeah. I love you, Alton Brown, but you're wrong. The ultimate survival food, the ultimate protein bar is pemmican. Pemmican is the ultimate combination of the perfect food. It comes in the perfect proportions that I think nutrition should come in. 60% fat, 40% protein, 10 or 5% carbohydrate from like cranberries or whatever wild berries they happen to have.
You know, you got up to 100% just then. 110%, right?
It gives 110%.
You said 60% fat, 40% protein, 5 to 10% over the top.
Yeah, whatever. So yeah, I mean, generally, you can make it by 50-50, dehydrated, like, venison or any kind of jerky you have.
Mm-hmm.
And then 50% rendered tallow. I've made it with, there's a way to make dehydrated ground beef. You cook the ground beef thoroughly.
Okay.
Then you put it in, you dump it out of the skillet, you put it in like a colander, you wash it, removing all the fat from it, put it back in the skillet, give it a second frying, you remove even more fat.
Wait, remove, put it in the, just to let it drip off? You're not rinsing it or anything?
No, you do rinse it.
Oh, God.
You rinse what?
You just lost me.
You wouldn't notice it when you eat the final product.
I've had boiled ground
it's
beef.
It's different. That's boiling it and then cooking it thoroughly until it's cooked, and then rinsing it, and then putting it back in the skillet, cooking off the moisture from that, and then you put it in your dehydrator and dehydrate it for about 10 hours. You get these little things called hot rocks. They're like, it's kind of like Pop Rocks made of ground beef.
What the fuck?
They rehydrate fairly well, but I use that and coconut oil to use my base for my coconut oil pemmican.
Okay.
Which was pretty decent and very easy to make.
Mm-hmm.
Because finding rendered deer tallow is kind of hard sometimes.
What exactly is tallow again?
Fat.
Fat.
But, yeah.
Okay.
You render the fat to make it...
Soap?
No, just... It lasts longer. You remove the water content from the fat, so there's nothing but purified lipids.
Lipids.
If only people would call dietary fat lipids, then I think the whole fat makes you fat thing would...
If they just called it lipids instead of fat?
Yep.
Yeah, because no matter how many times you tell people fat doesn't make you fat, they're like, no, you can't eat that. Eat the non-fat stuff.
Yeah. Like, I mean, even...
You're a fool. You're stupid, and you learned everything wrong.
Yeah. Another thing I used to like to do with my dehydrator is if you go to any grocery store and you see any frozen vegetables on sale for a good price, they're already prepared for dehydration. The freezing process is also the same as the dehydration preparation process, like blanching everything and then freezing it.
Uh-huh.
So you just, I've gotten like hash browns before, put them on a dehydrator, dehydrated them, and had hash browns like in, a mason jar.
Seriously?
For years, yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
You know, cubed tomatoes, peas. Some ones don't rehydrate as well. You happen to eat green beans. If you dehydrate frozen green beans, they'll never rehydrate worth a shit.
Right.
I mean, you can't rehydrate a green bean and have, like, a green bean, like, on your plate, like, as a side item.
Yeah.
They're just going to be... Wah.
No, but you could probably use them to, like, make crispy ones.
Probably. I've tried that, and I didn't care for that either.
I like crispy green beans. I like green beans no matter what. They're good. I know that's where me and you royally diverge in the world. Yeah. We're on opposite sides of the green bean chasm.
If you look up preservation methods for spaghetti squash, they say that you cannot dehydrate spaghetti squash. That's a lie. I've done it, and it rehydrates well enough. it's cute. Carrots get ridiculously tiny when you dehydrate them.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. Like, they turn into, like, nothing.
Like toothpicks?
Pretty much. Cauliflower turns brown when you dehydrate it, but turns back white when you rehydrate it.
The fuck?
I don't understand that.
It's kind of like how polar bears turn rust-colored when you put them in the zoo.
Yeah.
They do. You take a perfectly white polar bear out of the wild, put it in a zoo, and after, like, a couple of months, it's white fur, it's like whitish fur has now got like fucking brown rust colors all over it.
Huh.
It's weird because I've seen polar bears in the zoo and they're fucking rust colored, but they're not, I mean, not solid rust colored, it's splotchy. It's fucking weird.
Something to do with the UV lights being different or something.
Well, I don't know, see, their fur's not actually white, it's clear. It's clear and each hair is hollow. Plus, believe it or not, their skin is black, so you'd think with clear fur on black skin they'd show up black, but no.
Anyway. One thing that I've tried to preserve that was a huge, massive failure, and if you say you can do it, I disagree with you. I heard about a way to make homemade, dehydrated, powdered eggs.
Oh, I do that every day.
You're a liar. You're a lying son of a bitch.
I can do that just fine. I'll do it right now with my nuts.
So the directions were to, like, cook your scrambled eggs like you normally would, except for use the minimal amount or no fat to cook it in. So use, like, a nonstick skillet and scramble them in that. Because you can't... Like,
it's hard to find a nonstick skillet that's that good.
Yeah.
Because you're going to lose most... I mean... You're going to lose most of your eggs to the skillet.
Fats don't really dehydrate very well at all.
Well, yeah. They don't.
So you do that, and then you put them on a cookie sheet and then bake them to dehydrate them, and then you can put them on your dehydrator and bake them or cook them even – or dehydrate them even further. And then you can go the extra step and then run through the food processor to make them to a fine powder.
Mm-hmm.
You may be able to use these for cooking. Possibly. I mean, in the recipe or some sort?
Dude, in the military, they use powdered eggs constantly.
That's different, though. Powdered eggs are not cooked. The moisture is removed from them.
Right.
There's no way at home to really do that. Because they use these high-pressure sprayers, like, that atomizes the eggs to dehydrate them. You can't do that at home, really.
They should come out with a home version.
I don't know. I took them out camping with me. And I tried to rehydrate them, and after 2 hours of trying to rehydrate them, they still tasted like bland rubber. So I threw them away and ate an entire package of bacon.
Very good balls.
Yeah, so dehydrated eggs, massive failure, wouldn't try to preserve them.
But I would...
You can buy professionally made, store-bought, over-the-internet, powdered eggs.
I was just about to recommend that to our listeners.
Yes.
I mean, you know, you needed for your fucking emergency food rations and stuff.
Yeah.
They sell big cans of powdered eggs, big cans of powdered milk, stuff like that. So, I mean, if you're ever in a survival situation and you want French toast, unless you do that, you're screwed.
Yeah.
Unless you own your own livestock.
And even that, I've tried some commercial dehydrated eggs and not really ever had a lot of good luck with those. Like,
well, they're not.
You're not going to have the same.
They're not designed to be gourmet foods. I mean, for God's sakes, they've been used as sabotages on fucking episodes of Cutthroat Kitchen.
Yeah. So, however, I did see an experiment where people left eggs on their kitchen counter to see how long they would last until it'd be edible, and they got to 6 months, and they're like,
6 months non-refrigerated, they didn't go.
At the six-month mark, when they were frying them up, because they did them fried, not scrambled, so they can check the consistency and everything,
right.
They were kind of watery. They were like, these are probably, we're done. We're done now.
So, 6 months. Yeah. Non-refrigerated.
6 months non-refrigerated.
That is kind of fucking awesome.
Yeah. So, that's, I don't even worry about it. Like, if my eggs are, like, a week or two out of date in the refrigerator, whatever.
Oh, yeah. Dude, years ago when we were getting WIC, okay, WIC would always come with eggs. Eggs was always on the fucking WIC.
Yeah.
And so we'd always get, you know, you'd get everything that was on the WIC. And you'd get the fucking eggs. And at one point, I realized that we had like fucking 7 cartons of eggs in the refrigerator because we weren't egg people back then. We didn't eat a lot of fucking eggs. And I started, after a while, I'm like, fuck it, we got all these eggs, I'm just going to start cooking eggs. Anytime I get hungry or get the munchies or whatever, I'm going to start cooking eggs.
That's a good
so
idea.
I just started fucking making your ex-girlfriend used to call Mike's egg munchies. Beth.
Oh.
That one, yeah. Well, she was living with us at the time, so were you, for that matter.
Yeah.
And... it's funny, because the first time I started cooking them, I was already cooking them, and then I happened to look at the carton, and I realized it was over 3 months expired.
Oh, whatever.
But they still tasted fine. They'd been in the refrigerator since the day I had brought them home from the fucking store.
Yeah.
Literally, 3 months expired, nobody said jack shit about the taste. So I'm like, eggs keep forever. I discovered that, in the refrigerator. I mean, on the counter, 6 months, they'll last. In the refrigerator, good God.
Yeah, I think they had some in the refrigerator, and... I think they got to about the 6 month mark too, and they're like, I think we should call this experiment at this point.
So pretty much eggs will last for about 6 months.
Yeah, easily. So let's move on to our Gadget Punk, which is
Is the Gadget Punk? Oh yeah, that's what you were saying.
It's good enough. I didn't follow the directions, but there's tasting.
But it is called Valley Food Storage White Bean and Lime Chili.
Yep, which is not paleo, but today is cheat day, hence why I decided to eat it.
It's
a they
chili.
Are better ingredients, so there's no MSG, no trans fats, no oil, sea salt, No cholesterol. Oh, just add water.
But basically, what it is, it comes in a silver sealed package.
Made in America.
Which is resealable. Was it dehydrated?
It was dehydrated.
It was dehydrated. You had to boil water to add to it and let it sit for a while, I would imagine. Mix it up good.
Yep. It looks. It doesn't look like it's that well adjusted for camping. If you just have a pot. Like a lot of dehydrated camping meals are in packages like this. You add water to it. You close them up. You, just like I did. You mix them up. You let them sit there for a couple minutes. They rehydrate. This, they actually want you to add to a pot and then, like, boil for 15 minutes and then let stand. I didn't do all that.
I mean, you just cooked it in the thing?
I just cooked it.
How's it turning out, though?
Probably not as rehydrated as it could be, but the flavor, here, have a bite.
How hot is it?
It's cold. I mean, it's not cold, but it's good enough.
Not even the worst chili I've ever had.
No. I mean, taste-wise, it could be pretty damn good. But yeah, it could have been, if we would have followed the directions and boiled it and let it get tender and let it cool right, instead of just putting it in the package. If I was out camping and starving, I'd devour this bag.
Yeah. They say hunger is the best sauce.
Heck yeah. So yeah.
Fuck.
Up to 25-year shelf life. I like it. I mean, option, add meat desired. Of course, I would like to add meat.
But, I mean, that's the thing about it is, it comes in a relatively small packet that does not take up a lot of space. Could easily fit inside a camping bag or a bug out bag without taking up a lot of valuable real estate.
Yeah. So I like them. I think I may have read on their website that they don't use any GMOs, so.
Does have some relatively good seasoning to it, too.
Yeah.
I mean, aside from the fact that you didn't follow the instructions properly, therefore not being fully dehydrated,
rehydrated,
it tastes like chili.
Yeah.
I mean, it's unmistakably chili.
Yeah. I mean, it's still not, we can still add it to a sauce pot and simmer it, but.
Honestly, though, what you just read me about the cooking method, I mean, that's too much. I mean, if you're going to put food in a packet, you should have it where it can cook thoroughly, fully in the packet. And eat like the way you're doing it.
Yeah. I mean, I carry a decent cooking system with me out to the woods, so I could do it, but.
I mean, shit. I mean, there's easier ways to do it. I mean, fucking MRE technology is out there.
But, yeah.
I mean, I've got to get some more of those fucking sausage gravy MREs. Those were the bomb.com.
I've never had those. I've never had that flavor.
Oh, dude, it was so good, wasn't it, honey?
They were delicious.
Wow.
I mean, the best. I mean, hell, it was. I couldn't believe that those flavors came out of a fucking MRE.
All right. So, Valley Food Storage. Pretty good. I'd recommend them. There'll be a full review up on the website sometime this following coming week. Probably before this podcast, to be honest.
Well, on the couch potato mic scale of one potato being god awful and 10 potatoes being, oh god, I'm in heaven, and I think it just
you mean like bats. You mean like the bacon crust pizza that we did?
Yes.
Which was definitely, I would say, an 11.
Yeah, it was right up there. I actually give it about a 9 on the couch potato scale, a full 9 potatoes.
Because it wasn't crispy enough for you?
Yeah, pretty much. I would give this about a 7. 7 potatoes.
Pretty decent, yeah. So you have a challenge for me? That's what you got?
No. No, now it is time for a segment that we haven't done in a while. Springtime is in the air.
Oh, yeah.
And in the gardens and in the woods, for that matter. And we are resurrecting the wild edible of the week. And this week's wild edible is asparagus. Asparagus, Asparagus officinalis, may derive its name from the word asper, meaning rough, or aspergi, meaning to scatter. It has been long known throughout Appalachia as sparrowgrass or sparrowgrass. Obviously, through some mispronunciations that made sense to the hearer. Sparrows, which name may be applied to nondescript little birds, love the bright red seeds that ripen in mid to late summer. Asparagus is a light bluish-green plant with fern-like feathery fronds. It stands 3 to 4 feet tall, and this year's shoots grow out of and around last year's skeletal stalks. Asparagus, with its perennial roots and its annual stalks, grow wild along country roads, in old fields where fences used to run, and along present fence rows. This is because birds eat the berries, then sit resting on fences, where they excrete the undigested parts, including the seeds, which take root and grow. That sounds appetizing right there. Asparagus also grows randomly in meadows and weedy areas. It is a plant of the temperate zone. And if you'd like to know more about it, you could also pick up a copy of The Complete Guide to Edible Wild Plants, Mushrooms, Fruits, and Nuts, How to Find, Identify, and Cook Them by Katie Letcher Lyle. That has been our Wild Edible of the Week. Okay, and now it is time for Survival Punk James's Survitum Challenge. That's where I pick a random household object, and James has to give me no less than 3 survival uses for said object. And possibly a demonstration that we haven't done yet because I'm not actually giving him objects.
Oh.
Okay. As our loyal listeners know, on last week's episode, I gave him a broken coffee maker. You still have all the components, but it no longer makes coffee. So, use 1 in a survival situation.
As a pot to boil water in. Glass vessel is used to high temperatures.
You put
water in it and use it like a lensatic lens to make a fire from the pot.
3.
You can take apart the electrical cord and make cordage out of it. 4.
Ooh.
You can smash open the container, remove the metal plate from the bottom, and use that to cook food on, because it is a metal griddle.
Very good. Very, very good. And I've actually seen people cook on coffee makers before. Once again, on that show Cutthroat Kitchen.
Yeah.
Or do you have a 5?
You can remove the pot, snap open the lid, take the cord off, braid it through it, and make a miniature sling satchel from the inside container that holds the water.
You are really, you're really doing pretty good at this stuff.
I'm pretty inventive.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of proud of you. I like the way this segment is going. And that has been the Survitum Challenge of the Week. Next week's challenge is going to be, and I think you'll all get a kick out of this. Are you ready for this?
I am always ready.
A sewing machine. Sewing machine. No, but enough about that right
off
now.
Off the top of my head.
Yeah.
3.
Yeah. You have a week to think about it. Now shut up.
I don't ever think about it. I think I'm all on the spot.
Yeah, of course you do. No homework, no preparation.
No. Your dog's eating something.
You don't prepare for our show, dude. You prepare for it. Oh, for the love of God. Well, anyway, now it is time for Mike's Celebrity Invite of the Week. This week's Celebrity Invite, I would like to throw out there. I just bitched at you for not being prepared, and I don't have a celebrity invite. I kind of feel ashamed of myself now. Oh, oh my God. But I want to, you know, actually, I did have somebody in mind. I've been thinking about him a lot recently. I've been thinking about the interview we did with him. I had fun with it. I actually had more fun with what he was saying after the interview, where he came a little bit unhinged, or a bit a little loose. I'd like to invite DP, the Florida Hillbilly.
I knew you were
going to
say his name wrong.
What?
Oh, hey, wait a second. I like that you brought that up. Today is May the 16th, 2015?
Yeah.
It is Florida Hillbilly DB's birthday.
Today.
Happy birthday to you, DB.
Oh, happy birthday, DP. So for a birthday present, you got an invite back onto the show.
That wasn't even planned either. That's funny the way that worked out.
He's going to blush. So stop by Florida Hillbilly and wish him a happy belated birthday, because this episode will come out days after this day is done-dayed.
Done-dayed. And if you would also like to be on the show, or at least the products that you're trying to sell out there, drop a line to james@survivalpunk.com. We can work out a great sponsor spot for you. And as far as payment goes, we're very negotiable. We don't even need money. We'll take bitcoins. We'll take meat. We'll take barter. What else will you take?
I will not take firstborn children. I'm sorry. I'm not interested.
What about a handy in the men's room?
No.
No.
No. Maybe the women's restroom.
What's the difference?
You find women in women's restrooms.
Yeah, but what would you be doing in there? Sitting down and peeing, probably.
Getting a hand job. All right, and with that, on that bombshell.
And on that bombshell, it is time for you to join the Survival Punk Army.
Yes. Why?
You skipped your own Survival Punk Army ad, you cock!
I was giving the people a break of what I was giving people a break. There's no more advertising this week.
Okay, yeah, well, the Survival Punk Army wants you. You know it does, so join it. You get a bunch of stuff that we don't feel like going into right now.
Exactly.
All right, but this has been a pretty interesting episode. We're actually doing it in the morning now instead of waiting till like 10 o'clock at night when we're both exhausted and accidentally skip a week because we don't want to do it anymore.
And by morning, we meant to do this thing first in the morning. It is now 1:16 in the afternoon.
And on that bombshell, it's time to end. So for the Survival Punk Podcast, this is Couch Potato Mike.
This is James, seek the Survival Punk dot James Brain, blah, 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 DIY survive, bitches.
And if you're good, and my advice is if you're going to do a show, learn to speak English first. Use guys.
Cool with us.
Use guys.
Make the stop.
Stop it.